let me introduce you to your next favorite true crime podcast, Crime Salad.
Ashley and Ricky, a husband and wife team, go beyond telling crime stories. They dive into the darkest corners of human nature with the ultimate goal of preventing future tragedies. Together, they shine a relentless spotlight on critical issues like relationship violence and domestic abuse, inviting you to explore the complexities of these societal challenges.
Now, let us set the scene for a recent Crime Salad episode, which is titled The Search for Haley Cummings.
The disappearance of a 5-year-old girl leaves the Florida community in disbelief. In the early morning hours of the night, an open back door remained eerily left open where Haley was staying. A wave of dread swept through the community and the family as the unimaginable happened. Was this the work of a kidnapper, or did the little girl wander off? The search for Haley brought a community together in the darkest of times.
Since 2019, Ashley and Ricky, the Crime Salad duo, have continued to deliver stories that are not only fascinating and well-researched, but also have a strong voice for change and justice. So grab your headphones and prepare to be pulled into a world where mystery meets humanity. Make sure to tune in to Crime Salad wherever you find your podcasts and join a growing community of listeners who tune in every week. And now back to your regularly scheduled haunting.
Welcome back to Let's Get Haunted
with your host
Nat Strong
and Allie Terry. Woo. Natalia's back. Natalia's back.
Yes. Woo-hoo! Yes. And look,
we
what
need
else
an air
back.
Horn. Like, we need more sound effects.
This is a sound effect.
You're right. That's better than an air horn.
So I have a Pilates client who told me that they were going to listen to Let's Get Haunted during their 4-hour marathon run. They're doing the Chicago
that
marathon.
That is honestly the biggest compliment I can ever think of.
Yeah, because it's like, literally, I've ran one marathon and I never did it afterwards because it is haunted. It's horrible. Every second you're like, I wish I was dead. Am I dead? Is this purgatory? Yeah. Why did I do this?
It's like an out of body experience, right?
Yeah. Honestly, if you start it and you end it and you're just like, wow, I'm going to do another one. Like, that's a demon.
Yeah.
Like, you had no realization, no change, nothing. You're just kind of like, I'm the exact same person, the kind of person who runs marathons.
You're a masochist, maybe? Or, yeah, you just have a demon in your brain that's pushing you to hurt yourself more.
What are you running from? No. Anyways, he said that he was going to listen to our whole podcast. His name is Christopher. Shout out, Christopher, if you're listening. And I started thinking, like, oh, you know what? Like, that's really flattering. Why? And so I went and I listened to the first episode. And I realized we had so much more nut button in it. And then I was like looking at, you know, I was getting kind of nostalgic and I was looking at our first photo that we took from January at my old house where we're like back to back smiling.
That's so cute.
Yeah. And I had like little spikes in my hair. I was like kind of goth and you were like dressed up as the Thornberry girl.
Yeah. Eliza Thornberry.
Yeah. And it's been almost a year since then, right?
I know. October. I'm so proud of us that we've kept this going for almost a year now.
Yeah. But I was thinking about how much we've changed in this past year.
A lot.
Yeah. We both moved. You graduated.
You started your Airbnb business.
I started my Airbnb business. I've moved twice. We've done a lot. It's like neighbors.
You had just
out.
Moved there when we. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I had just moved there and I remember being like, we're going to start a podcast. And then we didn't know how to do the sound. So when I listened to the first
episode, it's
so echoey and I didn't even notice it. And I remember you said Steve said that our sound sucked. And I was like, well, Steve sucks. This sounds great because I had nothing to compare it to.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember that too, because I remember listening back to that episode and being like, this is fine.
Yeah.
Like, what is he talking about? And then now we have actual equipment that we can use.
Right.
So that there's less echo. Maybe there's not no echo. I don't know, guys. Does it still suck? You tell us, because we have nothing to compare this to.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just made me really, it was a moment of gratitude because I thought, how awesome is it that we have all this stuff that people have given to us? And I'm also editing the Area 51 vlog right now.
I'm so excited for
that. Yeah. And I'm like, that's so awesome that we have this community of people who literally just loves
haunted shit so much that you're like frivolous things that don't make money. Like, this is clearly just for fun, right? Like, there's no, like,
it's a hobby podcast.
It's a hobby. And everyone's like, you know what?
Just like a community of people that are just as interested in things that are maybe more like macabre or stuff that isn't necessarily socially acceptable to talk about. Like, I can't just go out in public and be like, let me tell you this alien story. Like, oh my God, the aliens are coming. Like, even though that's how I feel inside 90% of the time. So it's really awesome that there's like people that aren't gonna be like, wow, what a fucking weirdo, she believes in aliens. Like, there's a group of people that are like, yeah, maybe aliens are real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I like that.
I like that too.
I think that living in that maybe space is something that we can apply to everywhere in our lives. Like, if you meet somebody who's totally different than you, or you go somewhere that's not like you're seen at all, or you see something that you're not necessarily on page with, what if you just changed your thought from no to maybe? Maybe.
Well, and also, too, how would any of us know? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to live in that maybe space. Weirder things have been proven true.
Right.
For example, I don't know if you saw, I retweeted this from the Let's Get Haunted Twitter the other day, but did you know that scientists have discovered that spiders can fly using the electromagnetic fields of the earth? They can fucking harness that and fly. And spiders have been found in the sky up to 2.5 miles in the sky.
Okay, that's seriously, I almost started crying just now. Like, I do not.
This is real.
Look, there's tears in my eyes. Like, I did not like the idea of spiders just being flying around.
They fucking harness the electromagnetic energy of the earth, and they have been found up to 2.5 miles in the fucking sky, Natalia.
That is horrifying.
Now, if I just told you that, with no backup, no proof, like, if I was just like, oh, I think this is real, maybe you'd be like, wow, that's fucking crazy. No, no, no. But if you're living in that maybe space and you say maybe, then you don't feel so stupid when it's like, no, actually, this is an article. True. This is real.
Yeah, you know, my maybe space is telling me maybe spiders have reverse engineered alien technology.
Maybe spiders are the aliens from another planet. They came here on a meteor that crashed into the earth that destroyed the dinosaurs, and then they crawled out into the earth, and now they're slowly evolving and slowly learning our ways. And and every time we kill one, they like get more and more mad.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You know what's another maybe that I came across this week? Do you know what Rh positive blood is, or Rh negative blood is?
Is that the blood you have?
Yes. So I have this negative blood type, I call it. But actually, the negative blood type, what happens is that I do have this Rh protein, I think it is, on my blood platelets. But whatever, I was reading about it because I am obsessed with biohacking my body. And what I mean by that is like, oh, if I put butter in my coffee and it helps me metabolize it slower, then is that going to like give me the same effect of Adderall without taking Adderall?
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Like, I'm all into this like kind of like holistic.
It's hacking.
Shit.
It is though. It's body hacking. Like, how can I maximize my body's capability that I know it's capable of?
Right.
How can I maximize it consistently to my benefit on a daily basis?
Yeah. Like, if you think of your body as like the spaceship for your brain, right? Like, we are our brain, and then our body is just the vessel that our brain uses. It's like, I want my shit to be fucking awesome. Like, I want that Fast and the Furious shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna
go big or go home.
Exactly. I'm gonna go wild and out with this.
Look,
shit,
in the words of the late great still alive Drake, YOLO, right? So
YOLO,
you only live once, so like, maximize the shit out of the spacecraft that is your body,
right? And if you have this Rh positive blood that I have, it means that your body basically will attack anything that is not of that blood type. So specifically, it's harmful. You first notice it with pregnant women, because if your child has the negative blood type thing that I'm talking about, it's really, really rare. It's like the rarest type of blood. It's been dubbed, quote, golden blood, because you can give it
to
anyone.
Wait, are you telling me that gold flows through your veins?
I'm not telling you that. But
the gold has been inside you all along. All you had to do was look inside and you had your gold.
See, the reason that I'm so excited to tell this is because it makes me not only look very cool, but also the golden blood. So, yeah. Anyways, point is, the blood type that I have, if my child has a different blood type, which it's most likely to because it is a recessive gene, so it's probably going to have the positive blood type that, you know, my, I almost said husband, but I was like, what?
I was like, that. Did you get married?
Yeah, the person that I have sex with.
Was the wedding you were at over the weekend, was that your wedding and you didn't invite me?
Oh my God, was it my wedding? No, it wasn't. I have photos to prove that it was not.
Invent a time machine just to go back in time and crash your wedding.
Oh man.
And give you gold for your wedding gift.
What was I talking about? Oh yeah, okay.
Oh yeah, your baby's going to have different blood type probably because it's a recessive gene.
Right. So, but the reason that I bring this up, Alyssa, is because people since my body tries to kill and attack the fetus of the positive blood type, people have said that people with the blood type that I have, quote, golden blood, are from an alien race because why, like, you know when you mate a mule, or you know when you mate like a horse and a donkey and you make a mule and then it's sterile? Yeah. They're like, oh, well, if woman is supposed to get pregnant and then like her body is actually saying, you know what, I'm going to reject this child, then what, like, come on.
I mean, maybe.
Aliens confirmed?
Look, are you part of the Vrilia race?
I don't know.
I don't know. Did you also see that because the polar ice caps are melting or whatever, Antarctica is losing so much ice over time that maybe the secret underground German bunker
will become exposed. Or flooded.
Or exposed.
Right. Well, the Vrilia are going to get pissed.
They're going to get so pissed because their natural habitat is
going to be underwater.
Well, look, here's the thing. I didn't really care about global warming until I realized it might affect the Vrilia's habitat. We have to preserve them and keep them safe at all costs.
Wow.
So now I'm going to throw out all my straws and I'm going to burn my car.
Hold on. Can I say that both of those things are going to make it worse? Do not throw out all of your straws.
I'm throwing them into the ocean.
No.
That's what I have to do. California says straws are illegal. I got to just throw them into a landfill. Mm-hmm. And then I have to take my car and crash it off the side of a cliff.
No.
And then I need to start vaping and walking everywhere.
Wait, how did I understand the other two? I could maybe understand how those would like maybe work, but how would vaping make global warming better?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. It was just the thought of it. You were like, oh, if I'm not breathing in the oxygen.
Vaping is now illegal, isn't it? Aren't they trying to make vaping illegal on a federal level, which is so fucking dumb.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's like it's Melania's new initiative or something.
Well, good for Melania, though.
She's found something. She tried to do the bullying thing. That didn't really work out. Yeah. So now she's got to find something new.
Yeah.
Maybe vaping is her new, you know, passion project.
I hope.
It's good to have hobbies, dude. I go crazy when I don't have a hobby. So I support her having a hobby.
I mean, I'm all for making vaping illegal because I hate vaping. It's so annoying to me. Like, I don't want to be on the bus, you know, contemplating what I'm going to eat later, and then someone's like blowing like fake blueberry smoke in my face.
And I have super bad allergies anyway. And Steve, when he vapes around me, I literally like my nose rejects it, so it just swells up like my nostrils. I cannot breathe at all.
Yeah.
And yeah, it smells weird, and then like all the smoke, and I have asthma, and so then I have to be like, Steve, can you stop vaping, please, around me? And he's like, no, I can't. I'm addicted. I can't stop vaping around you. And
that's not an excuse.
It's not an excuse, man. I'm not addicted to vaping.
And yeah, first of all,
elsewhere.
If you get addicted to vaping, that's you chose to do that.
Like, yeah,
nobody
you chose this
like
life.
Strung you up and forced you to take nicotine in repeatedly. Like
exactly.
You had to have made that choice as someone who had never had nicotine before. You were like, you know what? I know the risks, and I'm still gonna do it.
Well, and as someone who was addicted to cigarettes throughout all of college and a year after college, so 5 years of my life, like if I can stop smoking cigarettes that literally have rat poison in them, you can stop smoking blueberry flavored smoke.
Right.
Come on.
I agree.
Just up your caffeine intake, use a nicotine patch, figure it out until you can get weaned off of that shit. Because I don't know, if I can do it and I'm like the most useless person on earth, then you can do it.
Yeah.
So let yourself be motivated, listeners. The spaceship of your body must be taken care of. And it's good for you to nut every once in a while. It's good for you to indulge in shit. I drink. Like, it's good for you to do things that are bad for you every once in a while. But be aware that you only have one life.
Thank God.
Thank God. Well, actually, I hope I have multiple lives because I want to be reincarnated as like something dope.
Well, I think that, you know, it's very interesting. This kind of goes into my story that I'm telling you today. So we got a lot of requests from people who wanted Halloween themed things.
Yes, yeah. We did. Do you have a Halloween themed story for me today?
I do have a Halloween themed story for you today.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I am going to talk about the origins of Halloween.
What?
So first of all, I want to tell you my hypothesis because I was looking for a scary Halloween story and I could not find like one pre-packaged, like great, like the Dyatlov Pass, our first episode, which Alyssa told me is a perfect example of how to do a perfect Let's Get Haunted story.
Yeah, I've never been able to live up to that story.
Because it's an actual story that actually happened that has tons of evidence, that has photos, and that has dates, and that happened such a long time ago that we can talk about it without being an asshole.
Right? Like, we're not going to be sued because all those people are dead.
But now, me looking for Halloween related stories, I could not find one. And the whole problem was is that there's so many bad things that have happened on Halloween that I came up with this hypothesis that something about fall or like October or this changing of the seasons, it makes people, it makes animals, it makes things just fucking act antsy and anxious and afraid and weird.
I kind of agree with that. It's like the changing of seasons does a lot to your body. Like, you know, as soon as summer ends and winter or fall begins, everybody at work is always sick. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's allergies start flaring up. Stuff just starts changing. I know, too, with animals,
my dog acts like an asshole at this time every year. I think it's because I have a Siberian Husky. He's very furry. And in the summer, he's kind of just like, it's too hot. Like, I can't do things. And then when the fall comes around, he's like, I have so much energy. Let me dig a hole for no fucking reason. Yeah. And I like,
this
I know.
This is my time. I'm literally from the Antarctic tundra originally.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe he's trying to tell me something, but like in the summer, this fucker will sleep until noon every day. Like, I kind of like have to force him to go outside. And now he's like putting his paw on my face at 8 o'clock in the morning and being like, I heard a leaf. Let's go outside. Also, when I had a horse, the horses act crazy. In the fall, the wind or something makes them act antsy. There's even a name for it. People say like, oh, he's got the kick. So traditions surrounding Halloween, Alyssa, can you tell me some traditions that you can think of that you would associate?
I can. Okay. So Halloween, first of all, we start putting up fake cobwebs all over the place.
Hey, I know what you're talking about. Wow. Yeah. I wonder if that's an American thing. It's like, I know what you're talking about. It's like nylon hose material. Yes. That's been shredded.
Normally we would like clean that shit up. But at Halloween time, we're like, yes, cobwebs.
Yeah.
And then we put up like jack-o'-lanterns in fall. We make sure that we get lots of little candy. We go trick-or-treating. We plan our costumes out. Oh my God, I have like 6 costumes this year, Natalia. I'm so fucking excited. We better go out 6 nights.
Well, don't worry, we will.
Okay, great.
There's a demon that awakes on my shoulder at this time of Halloween. I will say too, like I get very antsy and weird things start to happen.
And it's just like such a fun time. It's just so, oh my God, I just love Halloween time.
And this
it's
was
so
the other
fun
thing that I was going to talk about. It's like, bitches start acting crazy around this time of year. They're like, oh, like people start trying, like, I'm just going to say this. This is crude. So close your ears if you don't want to hear this. People just want to get fucked around this time of year.
No, I agree with you. Yeah. People want to let their whole flag fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I support that.
Right. And I think it's because there's like this changing of the seasons. It's like the earth is like fertility is closing in a way. It's going to be like dormant for a while. And people are like, oh, let me try to get it in. I don't know. Yeah. So there's also vandalism happens, smashing pumpkins, doing hood rat shit with your friends.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That happens. Mm-hmm. The haunted things, the scary houses, scary mazes, corn mazes.
Scary movies. Start scary coming movies. Out. Yeah.
People just, anything that's haunted, basically. Mm-hmm. People get into it. And I like it because it's not just like weird people that are getting into this. This is normie. It's very normie. You maybe, you know, to have your children go out and trick-or-treating on Halloween and you dress, like if you're a very normie wife, maybe you dress up as like Glenda the Good Witch and like serve cider on your lawn.
Oh, you can tell so much about someone's personality based on what they dress up as for Halloween.
That's true.
And you can also tell so much about what stage of life someone is in by what they dress up as for Halloween.
Right. Like when you're a mom, I feel like every mom dresses up as that. Who's the woman that's like from the Addams Family?
Elvira.
Yes. Moms fucking love to dress up as Elvira.
I love Elvira. Yeah. Moms. That's like moms that are still trying to be kind of fun dress up as Elvira. Mm-hmm. Then like there are some, like my mom for Halloween, the last costume I remember her wearing was like a Cinderella costume.
My mom dressed up as the Chiquita Banana Girl.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah, I forget what her name is, but she wore that like basket of fruit on her head.
Yeah, I met the guy that used to do food safety for Chiquita Banana.
Oh.
And I didn't like him.
Great story.
Great story.
And then around the world, so it's not just in the United States that we celebrate Halloween. They also have Dia de los Muertos in Mexico. Yeah,
absolutely, where they have the ofrendas.
And yes.
That's a fun tradition. I wish that we had that kind of stuff. I wish that ofrendas were a thing, because mm-hmm. I think that's so cool to not forget about the people that have passed over and take some time to like honor them.
So for people who don't know what an ofrenda is, it's like an offering, I guess, or like an altar to your ancestors, mm-hmm. and you put photos up of your ancestors that have passed, and the Day of the Dead is a day that you honor people who have died.
Exactly.
In your family.
And their memory. And I think that's so fucking cool, because family is so important to me, and I just love that culture, family is so important to them, that they will remember people who passed, you know, years and years mm-hmm. and years, like generations ago.
Yeah.
So cool.
I love that. Also, have you heard of Guy Fawkes Day in England?
I have, but I don't know what it is.
So, real short story. It's celebrated on November 5th in England, and they do bonfires and fireworks, but it marks the anniversary of the discovery of a plot organized by Catholic conspirators to, get ready for it, blow up the Houses of Parliament in London in 1605.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so there's this dude.
They celebrate this day?
So, that's kind of the question is, okay, so on November 5th in 1605, they find out this Guy Fawkes, his name is literally Guy Fawkes,
was... it's F-A-W-K-E-S, right?
Yes.
Okay.
He's conspiring to get rid of the parliament by blowing it up with a bunch of people, but they didn't have a very well-organized plan. They had a bunch of gunpowder that may or may not have been, like, soiled or something. And so several people tip off the police that this is happening, and then they catch the guy, and he's like literally in a basement surrounded by the gunpowder.
What a dumbass.
Yeah, I know. And then they're like, okay, well, we're gonna set you on fire in a bonfire. And then morbidly, what? Yeah. So then morbidly,
like a witch.
So morbidly, now that's how you celebrate the holiday.
Is by lighting bonfires?
Lighting bonfires.
England!
I know. And some people even put a little fake Guy Fawkes in the fire.
So they really killed him that way?
Yeah.
And now they celebrate his death every year on Guy Fawkes Day?
Yes. But but that's the thing, is they're unclear of whether you're celebrating. It's kind of like a meme holiday, because it's like, are we celebrating the fact that this person was discovered, or are we celebrating the fact that he almost got them?
Right. Guys, if you're from England, drop a comment in the SoundCloud comments, or tweet at us, or leave a comment on our IG photo dump for this episode, and tell us, how do you celebrate Guy Fawkes Day, and what is your understanding of what you're celebrating?
Right. And if I'm wrong about him being burned in the fire, then don't tell me, because I like that idea.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted to bring up, I feel like in other types of parts of the world at this time of year, we would call all of these things like Guy Fawkes Day and Dia de los Muertos, it's not necessarily a holiday, it's a festival, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it got me thinking, like, why don't we call Halloween a festival? Why is it called a holiday instead?
Well, did you know that in Spanish, the word for holiday is literally Día Festivo?
Yeah, I wrote, because I was triggered when I wrote this by this, and I said, in Europe, we might call this a, quote, festival, but here in the United States, we have no culture or dreams, and we call it a holiday. I don't like the word holiday, because the word holiday implies that celebrating is a break from the norm, i.e., we should be working 24/7, and when we aren't, that's frivolous activity for fun, and then that makes fun be like looked down upon, and then also calling Halloween a holiday discredits it as fun rather than necessary, which further promotes capitalism, and now I'm triggered. To me, Halloween is like, this is like required. It's like everyone needs to have a day where we get haunted.
Yeah, we need to just start partying more, and then maybe we'll all come together and there'll be greater understanding and less tension among the various classes, and we'll just party together.
If everyone across all cultures would maybe have a fucking drink every once in a while.
Yes.
All right, so that kind of brings me to, how did Halloween start? Well, Alyssa, I'm glad you asked, because
wait Natalia, how did Halloween start?
Well, Alyssa, I'm glad you asked because Halloween began with an ancient pre-Christian Celtic festival of Samhain, which was celebrated on the night of September 11th. Just kidding. It was October
31st. Oh, Natalia. I was like, wait a minute. Did we change it because we knew the Aztecs foretold that on September 11th, something bad would happen?
I love that this is about the Celtic festival and you were just like, yeah, you know what? Bring the Aztecs in.
Look, I'm very American and the only thing I know are the cultures that are close to our country. And so all I know is Latin America and the U.S. and I barely pay attention to Canada.
Now, this Samhain thing is fucking annoying because it's spelled Samhain. Now, as a person who reads English, how would you pronounce that?
Salmon.
Right?
Yeah.
Salmon. So I don't know. Maybe the M used to be a W. I'm sure we have a listener who's going to like tell us why.
School us yep. right now. But educate
you,
us.
You say it Samhain. And I listened to a few YouTube videos of people talking about this. And I was like, well, this person just clearly has a speech impediment. And then I like went to the next one and I was like, wow, all these people, they don't know how to spell this. And then I like literally had to go online and say, how do you pronounce salmon?
And it's Samhain.
Samhain. Yep.
Yeah, I guess, like you said, the M must have been a W. Just, I mean, it's like Wumbo when Patrick takes the Mermaid Man belt and he switches it to W and he sets it to Wumbo. Like, that's what we're doing with Salmon. We're setting it to Wumbo and it's Samhain.
I mean, Salmon Holiday doesn't sound as cool as what Samhain actually is. Do you want to know what Samhain is? Let's have you take a guess. What do you think Samhain is?
All right. This is Celtic?
Yep. It's the ancient pre-Christian Celtic festival of Samhain. All right.
One night a year where you get to pillage a town and come back and light a bonfire and then the crops start growing.
What you're describing right now is the plot to The Purge, I think. Right? But it's not too far off. So Samhain is a Gaelic festival marking the end of the harvest season and beginning of winter, or, quote, the darker half of the year. For Wiccans, it's known as the Witch's New Year because it's the start/restart of the cycle of the year, and it's one of the 8 Sabbats.
Mm.
Traditionally, it's celebrated from the 31st of October to the 1st of November as the Celtic day began and ended at sunset, and it's about halfway between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice. It was also the time when cattle were brought back down from summer pastures and when livestock were slaughtered in the winter. Special bonfires at this time were lit and they had protective...
So I got that right because I said you light a fire.
Yep. Yes, you did. These bonfires have protective and cleansing powers and there were lots of rituals involving them. And the Celts, who lived over 2,000 years ago in Ireland, the UK, and northern France, they were the ones who were celebrating this. And it's basically, it's like the year's harvest is being celebrated and the coming of winter is being celebrated. It's like a time for people to reflect on the past and kind of get excited about the future and prepare for it, the time of harvest.
That sounds positive.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe it is, maybe it's not. So there's no pillaging.
No pillaging yet. So when the special bonfires were lit, there was rituals that they did around these fires and involving them to make sure that the cattle that were being brought back from the summer pastures survived.
Okay, so I was kind of right because I said then stuff gets fertile or right. Because you do the bonfire.
It's close.
Okay.
And so the people who lit these bonfires, they gave food to the spirits so that the spirits would help them and appease them and make the, you know, cattle survive. So the feast started happening and people got drunk.
Okay, I love it.
Yeah, so this festival is kind of like an amalgamation of a bunch of different beliefs because as we know, in that time there were, you know, pagan holidays. There's people who choose to celebrate some rituals and everyone's beliefs. There's not like I feel like in current religions of now, everything is like so written out. It's like very specific. You believe this, you don't believe this, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pagans were kind of just like, this pumpkin represents fertility. I believe it, but my neighbor thinks I'm stupid. Yeah. But we still have the same religion.
Right. You know? Yeah.
It's like, whatever. So the Samhain festival, this is where it gets weird. Now, I don't know who decided to make Samhain festival at this time, but whoever did clearly was up to something because the Samhain festival happens to coincide with the exact time when the veil between the worlds of the living and dead was at its most thin.
Whoa.
And spirits, both good and bad, could pass between both worlds as they pleased. So naturally, if this happens, if the veil is, you know, very thin at this time, the dead maybe can return to Earth on Samhain.
And that's the entire premise of Dia de los Muertos, is that this is the time where spirits of the dead can pass over and, like, visit the world of the living, and that's why people leave food on their ofrendas.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so you have this festival where people are excited. They're bringing their livestock back from the pastures. They're harvesting. And harvesting not only means, you know, you're getting food harvested, but that's when people are making money because there's abundance, right? You're selling things, you're getting ready. And so everyone's getting drunk. They're eating a lot. There's fucking things on fire everywhere. The cattle are back. You know it's about
you're
to
be. You're just fucking like crazy.
You're getting lit because you might fucking die this winter. You don't
know. You never know.
Yeah.
Is another plague coming? I don't know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the Irish people in the centuries past were very superstitious, according to this website that I was reading. So the thought of otherworldly spirits roaming around all night was enough to make them shut their doors and not leave the house until sunset the next day. So some of these people, when sunset happened, would go inside.
So they would wait until the sun comes back up before they would go back out. So it was basically like anytime it's dark, there could be spirits around.
It was basically like, you know, whatever's happening after sunset can't be good.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a sentiment that, you know, a lot of people have on Halloween. It's like there's, you know, there might be demons out there.
And we even have, there's even that expression, nothing good happens after midnight. My mom would always say that to me all throughout high school. Like, nothing good happens past midnight. Like, you have
my
to
dad
be,
said that too.
Because I had a curfew. I think most people had curfews probably. But my curfew was 11, I think. And it was like, nothing good happens past midnight. Got to be home by 11.
That's what my dad said too. Yeah, that's funny. So when I read that Irish people are superstitious, I underlined it and I was like, question mark, question mark, question mark. Because I was like, what does that mean?
Right.
Like, do you have that? Have you ever heard that Irish people are superstitious?
No, I dated an Irish person once, not from Ireland, but he was loved Irish culture. I feel like all Irish people of Irish descent love Irish culture, which is great. But no, the only thing I remember about Irish culture is that the potato famine was like really traumatic for them. And then a lot of them came to the U.S. And then I know that they have their Irish Gaelic and they like to drink. And they like to fight.
And these are all, according to what I was reading when I was researching, are these superstitious? That's all just confirmed facts. So I was like, Irish is superstitious. And I found this whole website devoted to all these different superstitions that are of Irish descent. And I'm just going to read you one of them that I think kind of like encapsulates all the other ones.
Okay.
So this superstition says that giving something sharp to a friend can, quote, cut your friendship.
That's similar to Latin American superstition, too. Like, you're not supposed to give someone scissors. Mimi told us this. Remember,
really?
You're not supposed to give someone scissors as a present because it means that it's going to cut your relationship.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Ireland, in several other countries, oh, that must be in several other countries, giving or passing someone a knife or scissors is said to sever the relationship. So the only way around this is by accepting a coin in exchange. So you can still get your friends and family fancy kitchen knives, but they have to give you 20 or 10 cents in return.
That's literally what Mimi said. She said that when her and Jamie were dating, they had to give Jamie scissors for a present for some reason. I don't remember what it was, maybe a haircut. And then Mimi's mom was like, if you're going to give him those scissors, he has to give me a penny.
Right, so that it's not a gift. It's like he's buying it.
It's an exchange, yeah.
Interesting. I don't know where that comes from, but yeah, anyways. So I want to talk about these special bonfires, because remember I said there was rituals in the bonfires?
Yes.
And we've talked a little bit on this podcast before about divination, inquiring mm-hmm. about the future from ancestors, basically.
And we even talked about divination with pointy objects,
knives. Yeah, the knife, that one bitch from Oklahoma.
Yeah, that one Jameson bitch.
Yeah.
Doing all kinds of crazy shit with her knives.
So bonfires were also used in divination rituals. In the 18th century, a ring of stones, one for each person, was laid around the fire, perhaps even on a layer of ashes. So everyone then ran around with a torch, exulting. Yeah, I know. It's like,
just picturing people. It's like the Olympics where you have that big torch and it's like a whole ceremony, but it's just people everywhere running around with like Olympic torches. That's what I picture.
And then in the morning, the stones were examined. And if any were mislaid, it was said that the person who was represented by the stone would not live out the year. And that this custom may have come from an even older custom of actually burning that person.
So Jesus.
So it was like a game. It's like, well, we're having fun, but whoever loses this gets burned alive in this fire.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, right?
That's nuts. So that's bad vibes.
That's why these people were like, you know what? I'm going to go inside after sunset. I don't
know. I'm not even going to take my chances. Can't burn me alive if it's daytime.
There's also many rituals intended to divine the future of those who were gathered, especially with regard to death and marriage. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying about how people are just trying to get fucked in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Celtic mythology, apples were strongly associated with otherworldly creatures and immortality, while hazelnuts were associated with divine wisdom. One of the most common games at like Halloween, I'm calling it Halloween, but Samhain festivities was apple bobbing, which we still do.
We still do.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I went to Halloween parties and we all apple bobbed.
Yeah, and Girl Scouts, we did apple bobbing for Halloween.
Yeah. And this is my favorite ritual. This ritual involves hanging a small wooden rod from the ceiling at head height with a lit candle on one end and an apple hanging from the other. You then spin the rod around and everyone takes turn trying to catch the apple with their teeth.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. If I have learned anything from this year of doing this podcast with you, it's that spinning apples are fucking haunted.
Oh my God.
Yes. Apples are the most haunted fruit. Confirmed.
But here's the thing. If you miss that apple, do you just get a
candle to the candle? Face? Yeah. Also, are you blindfolded or are you just chasing it around? Like, can you use your arms?
It doesn't say.
I just, like, you're just chasing it around with, like, your arms tied behind your back, like, with or without a blindfold, just, like, trying to chomp on this apple.
You know, spinning. Ancient times.
they had to do some stuff to entertain themselves.
Yeah, they really, really, really did. You know? And imagine everyone's wasted doing all of this. So I'm sure it's like, this is a great idea to blob the apples.
I want to have a Samhain party where we just do all this stupid bullshit that they used to do at these festivities.
It would be so fun. Yeah, that would be so fun.
Yeah.
Also, another divination ritual, and this is one that you kids can do at home. Apples were peeled in one long strip, and then you toss the peel over your shoulder, and its shape was said to form the first letter of your future spouse's name.
How fun.
Also, two hazelnuts can be roasted near a fire, one named for the person roasting them, and the other for the person they desire. If the nuts jump away from the heat, it's a bad sign that the relationship will not happen, but if the nuts roasted quietly, it foretold a good match. I'm sorry, I just said nuts.
Hazelnut.
Items were hidden in food, usually a cake, and portions of it were served out at random to guests. So a person's future was foretold by the item that they happened to find. For example, a ring could mean marriage, a coin could mean wealth, a leaf. Someone was drunk making the cake. I don't know. But that's kind of reminds me of that Mardi Gras tradition, you know, where there's a baby in the cake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they had to stop doing it because people were choking on the baby.
Yeah. I think they still do it, but only if you're like over the age of however old.
Yeah.
It's called King's Cake.
King's Cake. Exactly. Yeah. My dad would bring one home from work every year because like no one at his work actually wanted it. It was just like
tradition,
like another like company sent it to them, so he would be like, oh, no one's gonna take this giant cake home. Yeah. Like, sure, I'll take it home to my family. And then every single year we would have like a week where there was just a giant cake made for an entire office of people sitting at our house that our whole family would just gnaw away at.
Well, and also King's Cake is, I mean, maybe this is gonna be controversial, but I feel like it doesn't even taste that good. It's just more about finding the baby.
No, it was, yeah, exactly. It was like an all white cake that had like random beads and a baby inside of it.
Yeah. the fun of it is that it's a choking hazard.
Yeah.
So it's a dangerous cake.
Yeah, we just love danger.
We do.
So this one's kind of gross. A salty oatmeal bannock. I don't know what a bannock is, but I'm assuming it's like a pastry of some sort. A salty oatmeal bannock was baked and the person ate it in 3 bites and then went to bed in silence without anything to drink. This was said to result in a dream which their future spouse offers them a drink to quench their thirst.
So they ate something that made them thirsty, weren't allowed to drink, and then when they went to bed they were going to have a dream about their future spouse
giving them something to drink.
These rituals are all about fertility.
I know, I'm telling you. It's like people are so freaking thirsty back then. Also, egg whites can be dropped in water and shapes foretold the number of future children.
Okay.
Children could also chase crows and divine some of these things from the number of birds or the direction that they flew. I love that one because next time I'm on the beach, I'm just going to run into like a flock of seagulls and they're going to fly everywhere. And I'm just going to be like, I'm getting married.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to Samhain. What do you think of it so far?
So I think Samhain sounds like a rollicking fun time. I think it sounds dangerous, as most things were in olden times. It sounds very haunted to me. It sounds like it's like a lot of superstition.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a lot of things can go wrong. It also sounds like did people actually believe in this stuff, or was it just like a fun time?
So I don't know.
Okay.
I think it was.
Because it sounds like your whole life could be fucked up if you got the wrong, like, you know, drop egg whites and it forms a zero. Then yeah. Everyone's like, oh, don't want to marry you because you're going to have zero kids.
Right.
Or like you have a dream about like your worst enemy and you're like, damn it, I'm marrying Igor or whatever. Like, Igor. Fuck. And then like that's just like your life now because you believe in it.
You got Igored.
Yeah, you got Igored.
Yeah, I think Samhain, to me, it just sounds like a bunch of people getting drunk. And then they're just like, there's this huge feast and they're like, what are we supposed to do? And then someone's like, I know your game. Let's take these eggs and put them in water. And then that means how many children you have. And then they're like, wow, Igor, that's so cool. Like, where did you come up with that? And he's like, I didn't make that up. Everyone in my village plays that game.
Why does Igor sound like nobody wants to marry Igor and he comes up with all of these games hoping someone will have a dream about him so right. that they have to marry him?
Right. He's like, I like Alyssa. Alyssa, you put your face in this bucket of apples and try to get one.
Igor, I'm not marrying you.
Oh. So Samhain eventually kind of morphs into Halloween because you have people lighting bonfires, people offering sacrifices and paying homage to the dead. Some of the villagers were wearing animal skins to, quote, drive away the bad spirits or ghost visitors that might have come through that thin veil. And the banquets were, it's unclear whether, you know, the banquets are being fed to placate ghosts or drunk people are just eating it anyway. So you kind of just have like what I imagine to be people who take this really seriously and then just a bunch of drunk Irish people who are like, I'm gonna dance around with the fire.
Yeah.
You know? And like, if we know anything about people who are super religious or like type A personalities, things that piss them off is people not taking something seriously that they're doing.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like if this person spends all year collecting wood for this bonfire and they set it up and then you go and like get drunk and throw a gourd in it and knock it over, like that person is gonna be manifesting evil energy for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as the centuries go on, that morphs into people begin dressing as ghosts and demons and other malevolent creatures while performing in exchange for food and drink. So they're like, can we have something from the banquet? And then they're like, no, this is for the ghosts. And then they're like, well, I'm a ghost. Look, I'm dressed up, you know?
Oh.
Or they're like, oh, they like recite a poem or do a dance or something in exchange for getting a treat. And it's like trick or treat. They call this custom mumming. And it goes back to the Middle Ages, but it sounds like trick-or-treating,
right? It does sound like trick-or-treating.
So,
like, look at my cool costume, and I'm coming to your door, and I look really cute, because it's mostly, like, a kid thing in our culture. And so it's like, oh, now my prize for being so cute and, like, taking all this time to dress up as something creative is that you give me a treat.
Yeah. Well, now, fast forward to the mid-19th century. America is being colonized. A lot of the people who are coming over here, immigrants, are Irish. And you know how they celebrate Guy Fawkes Day over there, right? The lighting of the bonfires. So some of those people are fleeing from the Irish potato famine in the 1840s, and they come over to the United States, and they still have all of their Irish traditions. One of those is lighting of the bonfires. And then that kind of adds to this whole idea of Halloween having these bonfires and people like, you know, just
being
spirits and all that. And then jack-o'-lanterns are Irish traditions.
Oh, wait. Before you say... I know this. Can I say it?
Yes.
They used to originally be turnips.
Yes.
And people used to cut them and make little faces in the turnips.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me the tale of Stingy Jack. Do you know this?
No, I don't.
You're going to love this. So Stingy Jack is an Irish folktale, and I read two different ways of the story, because as you know, with folk tales, their oral traditions get passed down. Everyone kind of has their different idea of what it is. So the first one is from pumpkinnook.com. It says, "The Tale of Stingy Jack and the Jack-o'-Lantern." Stingy Jack was a miserable old drunk who took pleasure in playing tricks on just about everyone. Family, friends, his mother, and even the devil himself.
Oh, shit.
One day, Stingy Jack tricked the devil into climbing up an apple tree.
Apples! Can we just keep apples are fucking haunted.
Well, as we know, they are a symbol of the other world.
They're fucking haunted. Look, it all goes back to Adam and Eve. What mm-hmm. kind of fruit did Eve eat? The apple.
Oh, you're right.
It's literally the devil's fruit.
Apples are symbols of the other world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I guess across all religions, they are kind of symbols of the other world.
Yeah.
Hmm. So after Stingy Jack tricks this devil into climbing up the apple tree, he hurriedly places a cross around the trunk of the tree. And then the devil, unable to touch a cross, was stuck in the tree.
So that's really funny to just think, especially because last episode, James pointed something out that I had never really thought of before. James's perspective coming from like a very religious person. He said that something about the devil that's interesting is that it's not like God, where God is omnipresent. The devil can only be in one place at a time. Ooh. And so him saying that, I guess I'd never really thought about it before. And I was like, oh, that's a really interesting way to think of it. Because then if the devil's stuck in this apple tree, he literally can't be anywhere else because he's not like God. He's not omnipresent. So wow. That's kind of cool, because if he's stuck in this apple tree, Stingy Jack just basically did the world a favor.
Well, the only reason Stingy Jack did this is because once the devil is in the apple tree, he makes the devil promise to not take his soul when he died, because he's just a horrible drunk.
Okay. So that's like really dope.
So yeah. Now the devil, yeah, right, like he sounds like a smart dude to me.
Yeah,
he
figured sounds it really out. Smart.
So once the devil promises not to take Stingy Jack's soul, Stingy Jack removes the crosses and the devil climbed down out of the apple tree. Now many years later, after Stingy Jack died, he went to the pearly gates of heaven and was told by Saint Peter that he was mean and cruel, had led a miserable, worthless life on earth, and therefore was not allowed to enter heaven. Well, I want to say that Saint Peter kind of sounds like an asshole. Like, that's kind of a rude thing to say to someone. Can't you just be like, no, you're not on the list?
Also, like, Saint Peter is basically the bouncer to heaven, but isn't St. Peter stuck in purgatory then? Because nobody wants to be a bouncer for their entire life, like right. Rejecting people like that are really angry, that really want to get in. Like, you're basically just in a perpetual state of like fight mode.
Bouncers haunted confirmed.
Confirmed.
So now Stingy Jack is like, well, I can't get into heaven. So what does he do? He goes to hell. And he sees the devil, and the devil's like, you know what? You're an asshole. You remember when you made me promise not to let you into hell? Well, guess what? You can't get in. Boom. So now Stingy Jack is scared because he can't go to heaven. He can't go to hell. He has like literally nowhere to go. So he's forced to wander about forever in the dark netherworld between heaven and hell. Now, he asked the devil how he could leave as there was no light. And the devil, here's where the devil's kind of nice. He's like, you know what? Fine. And he tosses him an ember from the flames of hell. He's like, here's an ember from the flames of hell. Stingy Jack, you know, you're kind of an asshole, but we like assholes around here. So here's some flames. And so now Stingy Jack has this flame and he's like, well, I need something to harness it in. And he finds a turnip. And because a turnip is one of his favorite foods, he always carried one with him. And he hollows it out. He puts the ember that the devil gave him inside the turnip. And then from that day onward, Stingy Jack roamed the earth without a resting place, lighting his way as he went with his jack-o'-lantern.
Ooh, I love that.
Now, here's the other version of the story by history.com. Which one do you think sounds more reputable? Pumpkinnook.com or history.com?
I mean, probably history.com. But pumpkinnook.com sounds like a website that you and I would make. And so I'm kind of partial to it.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me the correct story.
Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink with him.
Oh.
True to his name, Stingy Jack didn't want to pay for his drink, so he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin so Jack could use to buy their drinks.
What?
Yeah. So once the devil turned himself into a coin, Jack decided to keep the money and put it in his pocket next to a silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back into his original form. I love this story because it's like...
Natalia, this is you.
I know. Outwitted
like,
the devil.
You find treasure and you're like, no, I gotta keep it. Like,
I'm like, hey, remember, everyone's gonna like, drink.
Natalia, don't keep the treasure. It's literally the devil. And you're like, but it's silver.
Put it next to my silver cross, which I also found.
Yeah.
So then Stingy Jack eventually frees the devil under the condition that he would not bother Jack for 1 year, and that should Jack die, he would not claim his stole. The next year, Jack again tricked the devil into climbing up a tree to pick a piece of fruit. While he was up in the tree, he carved the sign of a cross into the tree bark so the devil could not come down until the devil promised not to bother him for 10 more years. Soon after, Jack died, and as the legend goes, God would not allow him into heaven. The devil, who was upset, wouldn't let him into hell. Obviously, he turned him into a coin. And he sent him off into the night with burning coal to light his way. He put the coal into a carved out turnip and began roaming the earth. And that's the end of that story.
I think that my favorite part of that story is that in this scenario, the devil's like...
became a quarter.
Well, no, the devil's... well, that too. But the devil's like, you know what? Hell's pretty dope and I don't want to let you into my domain. Whereas we think of it as being like the devil takes these souls and tortures them for all of eternity. Right. So you think he would be like, I fucking hate Stingy Jack. I'm going to torture him for all of eternity. But instead he's like, no, I don't even want to see you. That's how much I hate you.
You're just not... we're not chill. Yeah. We're not vibing.
Exactly. Yeah, I like to... now I like to think, will someone draw this as like hell is just like a super cool club with like all of our favorite artists and celebrities,
and there's like pole dancers, yeah, and like,
and it's like a lounge and everyone's having a good time, like doing whatever drugs and just chilling and wearing fashions that they're not supposed to be wearing. You got the fucking coolest people of all times of all the earth hanging out, and then only the squares aren't allowed in.
Yeah, he's like, Stingy Jack, fuck you.
Yep, exactly. Stingy, we don't want him in here.
Yeah, he's not gonna pay the strippers.
So then that turnip thing turns into a pumpkin, because when these Irish immigrants come to the United States, the pumpkins are native to America. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what, this is way easier. Yeah. I don't even know what a turnip looks like. Is that little red thing?
No, those are radishes. Turnips are bigger, they're purple, they're shaped like radishes. They're like carrots if you took a carrot and smashed it down into like a smaller, fatter thing.
That sounds so hard to carve anything, yeah, out of.
I know. I've, yeah, thought about that too, because I didn't hear that legend, which is like so fucking cool, but I know that people used to carve turnips, and I just remember thinking, what a pain in the ass, because at least pumpkins are kind of hollow on, yeah, the inside.
It's really easy to carve, yeah, a pumpkin, like literal children do it.
Exactly.
So now fast forward to the early 20th century, these Irish and Scottish communities that were living in the United States had, you know, all these ruffians practicing this Guy Fawkes Day. And we have this tradition of literally like the symbol of this tradition is literally a guy named Stingy Jack, who is so horrible that even the devil doesn't want to hang out with him. So these Irish and Scottish communities in the United States are kind of reviving these old world traditions of mumming, you know, the trick-or-treating thing. Uh-huh. And by the 1920s, it just starts turning into pranks.
Love it.
Yep. Tricks. People are wearing these masks. And this is, you know, this is right before the Great Depression. So some of these costumes that they're making are very rudimentary. Here's a picture of a mask that children used to wear.
That's honestly more terrifying than anything I've ever seen in my life. That's really fucking terrifying.
Can you describe this mask?
Yes. We're going to put this on the Instagram photo dump for this episode. It looks like it's a torn off piece of cloth from maybe like a pair of jeans or a shirt. Mm-hmm. And it has two little tiny holes cut out for eyes. Uh-huh. And then somebody has drawn on these eyebrows that look very angry to me. And, yeah, then there's like a slit for a nose. And then they've just scribbled a black mouth. Like they've scribbled like just a square. Is that just like a square?
It's like yarn. It looks like yarn. Scribbles, but it's yarn. So someone's like yarn? Sewed or glued on.
Wow.
There,
yeah. Yeah, that's honestly, it looks like the Cookie Monster or a Meeseeks. If that was like a really fucked up, like demonic Cookie Monster or a fucked up Meeseek.
Yeah, it's scary looking. But children are wearing these and kind of getting rowdy. And the Great Depression happens soon after. And this exacerbated the problem. Halloween starts leading to the widespread adoption of organized community-based trick-or-treating in the 1930s, and things that people were doing were stealing gates off their hinges, graffiti, vandalism, just like throwing water bombs at people, egging. That's where all of the like bad stuff kinds of comes about.
Love it.
Yeah, is like these rowdy boys who have nothing to do with their energy. When World War II begins, sugar rationing starts happening, and so that means that there's not as many treats to hand out, and so the trick-or-treating is kind of put to a halt.
Uh-huh.
But then boomers make Halloween come back. Do you know how?
How?
After the post-war baby boom, trick-or-treating reclaims its place among other Halloween customs because sugar rationing is ended and candy companies capitalize on the lucrative ritual, launching national advertising campaigns specifically aimed at Halloween, which turns into the most second largest commercial holiday we know today as Halloween. Americans spend $2.6 billion on candy each Halloween, and it's all because these boomers made it happen again.
So you're telling me that all of these memes about, like, shut up, boomer, we yeah. really should be thanking the boomers, because without them, our tradition of dressing up as hoes, getting hella candy, yep. getting super drunk, going out to clubs, going fucking nuts one night a year, we wouldn't have that tradition without the boomers.
Right.
Thank you, boomers.
That's exactly what I'm telling you. I appreciate you,
and I appreciate all that you've done for this great nation.
Now, the whole reason that I told you kind of about the history of Halloween and all of these random traditions and stuff is because I wanted to set the stage for the following stories that I'm about to tell you that are supposed to prove my hypothesis that when this veil is made thin between both worlds, the living and the dead, I believe, according to what I have read, no, like, good things happen outside on Halloween after the sun goes down, because okay. I think the demons are out. And if you are outside, you have this rowdy energy that's making you for no reason want to terrorize things and conceal your face and basically what I would call being almost like possessed by evil spirits.
It's basically
spirits.
The purge.
Yeah. Like, but people become possessed.
Yeah.
That otherwise wouldn't. So here's some creepy things that have actually happened on Halloween. The first one I'm going to start with is Harry Houdini died on Halloween.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When he got punched in the stomach by that asshole.
Exactly. That's exactly
Fuck
what
that
happened.
Guy. I hope that guy went to jail.
So what happened was is these random students, his name was Jacques Price and Sam Smilovitz, they went up to Houdini and asked, quote, if he believed in the miracles of the Bible and, quote, whether it was true that punches in the stomach did not hurt him. He then, Jacques, delivered some very hammer-like blows below the belt to Houdini. And Houdini at this time was reclining on a couch, having broken his ankle while performing several days earlier. And so he was basically just assaulted by these two people who were like, you think you're better than God, basically, you know? And
I fucking hate. I hope that guy was sterile and he has no ancestors that are still living.
Wow, Alyssa.
You're going to assault Harry Houdini, the greatest magician and escape artist to ever do it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you get away with that.
Spicy.
Spicy. I'm not putting anything on that guy's ofrenda.
Alyssa's spicy.
He can just starve to death.
Harry Houdini died. God. Harry Houdini died of a ruptured appendix at 1:26 p.m. on October 31st, 1926 in room 401 at Detroit's Grace Hospital, aged 52. In his final days, he believed that he would recover, but his last words before dying were reportedly, I'm tired of fighting.
Oh.
It's haunted.
Haunted.
Another haunted thing that happened was on Halloween in 1963 at the Indiana Coliseum, which is basically like an events place. There was a Holiday on Ice skating exhibition at the Indiana State Fairgrounds, and a propane gas explosion killed 74 people and injured Jesus. Nearly 400. It was just after 11 p.m. October 31st, with only 3 minutes remaining in the opening night show. The skaters were finishing a medley called Mardi Gras, and no one realized that a propane gas was leaking from a rusty tank in the concessionary, slowly filling the unventilated room. As the skaters began gliding into pinwheel formation for the finale, the gas came in contact with an electric popcorn machine. When the gas ignited, a blast of orange flame shot 40 feet up through the south side seats, catapulting people and chairs through the air. Concrete chunks and body parts rained down.
I don't like it.
Many of the spectators fell on the ice on the south side of the arena, while others fell into the crater caused by the explosion and were buried underneath huge slabs of concrete.
How have I never heard this before?
54 people were killed, and another 20 later died of injuries. Indianapolis news reporter Bill Roberts was attending the show with his wife. He described the scene in graphic detail.
Mm-mm.
Do you want to hear it?
Okay.
You're going to hear it. For a few seconds, no one cried out. Then there were screams and cries of agony, and the audience jumped from their seats as if in unison and started rushing for the exits. The orchestra continued to play. My wife was drawn to a small blonde girl with her mother. The child's blue coat was soaked with blood. They were looking for the father. Outside the main entrance, a man was sitting with a huge black and blue lump by his left eye. Part of the calf of his left leg was gone. Indianapolis Star reporter Richard R. Roberts reported the events as he saw them. You walked into a nightmare. This was the worst thing I have seen since combat in World War II.
Jesus.
The lights above still cast a bluish light as they cast onto the ice show. A red satin slipper was on the ice. 3 feet away was a pool of blood. A gray-haired man lay on his back staring lifelessly at the ceiling. Ambulance attendees threw a gray blanket across him. Chairs were scattered like 10 pins on the south end of the big building. The fairgrounds itself was almost like a battleground. The surrounding streets were thick with police and edges of the streets jammed with crowds like war refugees, slowing the movement of ambulances and fire engines.
That's and then
here's
horrific.
Here's a photo from that. So here's a photo of the stadium
after this event. They've laid out all these bodies.
Oh my God.
So it's a horrific thing. You're at the fairground watching a ice show and they're in the finale and all of a sudden an explosion happens, sending just half of the audience 40 feet up into the air.
Yeah, we'll put this picture on our IG photo dump as well. Basically what I'm looking at is you can see that looks like the ice skating rink in the middle, right? Because there's all the lights over it. And then there's all these like stadium seating all the way around it. The side closest to the person who's taking the picture is completely destroyed. There's chairs, like pieces of chairs just littering the ground, pieces of stadium seating littering the ground. Then in the middle on the ice, they've like set up this almost like a triage center where there's all these like tables and body bags and blankets covering bodies and body parts. And then there's all these people standing around. Oh my gosh, this is, horrific. It's horrific.
And what are the odds that the state fair has been going on all throughout the season and then all of a sudden 1 hour before October 31st is over at the finale of this ice show, this freak accident that has been cooking for probably the whole month, right? This gas leak has just been building and building, just all of a sudden happens.
How has this not been turned into a movie?
It has been turned into a movie.
Oh. What was the movie?
I think it was called... I can't remember. I think it was called like something about the Indiana. The
Is fairgrounds it like a recent one or an old one?
I just saw it on the Wikipedia and its name looked boring. And I was like, I've already said too much in this podcast. Yeah, let's not learn about it. Yeah,
understandable.
Also, here's some other creepy things that have happened. In 2012, in the early hours of the morning after Halloween, a tutu-clad Marine spotted a uniform-clad Marine in a wheelchair and thought the man's costume was a weak attempt at mocking the military. So the Marine in the tutu attacked the man in the wheelchair, and as it turned out, the Marine learned upon his arrest that the man's wardrobe was not a comment on our servicemen and women. He was actually a disabled veteran.
Oh my God. What a dumbass.
That's so ironic, too, because you're literally wearing a tutu and you're a Marine wearing a tutu. So, like, if that was a person who was dressed up.
How was it mocking? Yeah.
Right. And also, why do you, like, that just shows what he thinks of people who are disabled.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Why is that mocking?
Oh, my God.
I know. He's a dick. But you're not going to wish that he starves to death and, like, he's sterile and a famine on his family?
No, because you know what? He went to jail.
Oh, spicy.
Yeah.
All right. Also, you've heard of this urban legend of poisoned candy, right? Like your parents are always like, there's going to be a hook in your Reese's.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Dad, actually, you're fat and you just want to eat it. Well, the reason that comes along is because there was the murder of Timothy O'Brien in 1974. He was an 8-year-old from Deer Park, Texas, and he died on Halloween night after ingesting poisoned pixie sticks. They had cyanide in it. Making this crime more horrific is the fact that the perpetrator was not a neighbor, but it was his own father trying to collect insurance.
There's just like terrible people in this world.
Now, here's one that has a happy ending. Have you heard of the Halloween graveyard kit letter?
No.
So, you know those like cheap little Halloween grave card kits you can get at like Target or Walmart where you like, it's like a plastic graveyard and you put it in your lawn. It's like Halloween decorations.
Bless
you.
Thank you.
You put them on your lawn to make it look like your house is a graveyard.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So in 2012, an Oregon woman was shopping at Kmart and she bought one of these Halloween graveyard kits. So as she starts to open it, she finds inside in the cellophane interior a folded note that was folded into eighths and it was stuck in the styrofoam. It says, it's a piece of paper. Sir, if you occasionally buy this product, please kindly resend this letter to the World Human Rights Organization. Thousands of people here who are under the persecution of the Chinese Communist Party government will thank and remember you forever. This product is produced by Unit 8, Department 2, Mai Shengji La Labor Camp, Shenyang, Laoxing, China. People who work here have to work 15 hours a day without Saturday, Sunday break, and any holidays. Otherwise, they will suffer torture, beat, and rude remarks. Nearly no payment, 10 yen for 1 month. People who work here suffer punishment, 1 to 3 years on average, but without court sentence. It's unlawful punishment. Many of them are Fanyilong practitioners who are totally innocent people, only because they have different beliefs than the communist government. They often suffer more punishment than others. So,
wow.
Essentially,
it's like a message in a bottle, cry for help situation. Yeah, but in it's like, this right, graveyard
it's decor. Like, you know when you read things that say, oh, made in China?
Yeah.
And we're always like, oh, like jokingly, like this is probably like Chinese, like children making this, or yeah, this is like labor. Child labor. Well, this is literally someone's in a labor camp and they're saying, hey, like, help us. We don't know what to do. So the woman posts a photo of this to Facebook and asks for feedback, which is such a a woman from Oregon shopping at Kmart.
What year did this happen in?
2012.
Bitch, go to the police.
I know. And Human Rights looked at it and they said, we're in no position to confirm the veracity or origin of this. But they look into it and then they investigate this and end up closing down the labor camp.
Wow. So it was real.
So it was real. And that was a happy situation.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that, you know, I like that one because a lot of these other ones aren't as good. Like this girl who was wearing in 2012, the same year, a 9-year-old was wearing a black outfit and a black hat with a white tassel. She was mistaken for a skunk by a relative and got shot.
What? How?
I don't fucking know.
How?
Also, why are you shooting skunks, you dick?
How do you mistake a child dressed as a witch for a skunk? How drunk are
you? Exactly.
Drunk as a skunk, as the expression goes. Like, that's how drunk you were.
Well, she survived, which is why I feel better about telling you this story. But yeah, she...
Also, you're never supposed to shoot a skunk because...
It just releases
all of its sack of... I know. Odors.
And this just further proves our idea that the demons are out on Halloween.
Oh my God.
So also in 2011, a 55-year-old Chicago resident realized his candy bag was missing. So naturally, he blamed a neighbor for the missing sweets and then took his revenge to an extreme by stabbing his neighbor to death with several steak knives.
What is wrong with people?
I'm telling you, they're getting possessed by demons.
It's the full moon. It's the harvest moon. It's something.
It's all of it, right? And then the last one I want to tell you about is the one that makes me the most upset. It's about, have you ever heard of Yoshihiro Hattori?
No.
Yoshihiro Hattori was a 16-year-old who was born in Nagoya, Japan. He went to Baton Rouge in August of 1992 as part of the American Field Service Student Exchange Program. He also had received a scholarship from the Morita Foundation for his trip. He was hosted as a homestay student by a college professor
and a physician
and their teenage son. So this is a good kid, right? Yeah. He... 2 months into his stay, so he's only been in this fucked up country for 2 months, he's going to go to a Halloween party and he dressed up as John Travolta's character in Saturday Night Fever. So he's wearing a white tuxedo and he goes with his homestay host's son, who's also his same age, who's wearing a neck brace because he was recently injured. But then he decides that to turn that into his Halloween costume. So he puts like bandages all over himself like he's like an injured zombie type person.
Like a mummy or an injured person.
So they're dressed up as John Travolta, like disco outfit and like an injured thing.
Yeah.
Pretty harmless.
Yeah.
Right. They are looking for a party and that they got invited to, and they get the wrong address and they knock on a door. And they're like, hey, we're here for the party. And it's the wrong house, but it's like decorated like Halloween. It has like Halloween decorations. So they assume that it's the
honest
party.
Honest mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. And the wife that lives at this house, the wife of the couple that lives in this house, comes out the side door and sees these two kids dressed up in front of her door. And instead of being like, it's fucking children dressed Halloween, up Halloween, yeah. She goes inside and tells her husband to get a gun. So her husband goes inside and gets a gun, and it's not just a gun that has a laser guided sight on it.
Okay, like a sniper scope or something, where like the laser points at the person, then you shoot,
right,
so that you can aim better.
Yes. And so the not Yoshi but his homestay partner sees that this man is holding a gun at him because he sees the sight on him. And he's like, the guy yells freeze. But then Yoshi has only been in America for 2 months and he's Japanese and he's part of this homestay program. And he's 16 years old practicing his English. And he's not wearing his contacts that night because he wanted to be in character as John Travolta.
Right.
So he can't really see that well and his English isn't that good. And so it's unclear if whether he thought like, oh, like, you know, he doesn't know American customs. He's like, we're all dressed up weird. Is this like part of Halloween? Yeah. I don't know. Also, who the fuck has a laser sighted gun? Sorry,
who the fuck sees someone on Halloween night dressed up as John Travolta and your first reaction is, let me get my gun out because they're robbing me?
Right. So he thinks, Yoshi thinks that this guy is dressed up as a character too, because yeah. Who the fuck would do that?
Yeah, no one.
Yeah. And his friend is like, hey, wait. And then the guy from 5 feet away shoots him in the chest and then goes inside, closes the door. Now, he, the kid that didn't get shot in the chest, he runs next door and gets neighbors help. And he's like, hey, call the ambulance, call the police. This is what happened. And as this guy, the neighbor is trying to help, the woman comes back out and is like, don't, just leave. Don't help him. I know. And then fucking, this pisses me off so much. In the court, he gets acquitted of manslaughter because he said he was reacting honestly to his wife and that he feels bad that he overreacted, but the kid was on his property.
Wasn't their excuse that they had just been recently robbed or something, and so he thought it was like another teen robber? But like, I'm sorry, you don't just get to shoot somebody.
No, that wasn't his excuse. His excuse was that Hattori, quote, had an extremely unusual manner of moving that any reasonable person would, quote, find scary. So to me, that's just another example of how people get all fired up at this time of year.
I hate people. I know.
I'm so upset by that. But to make it a little bit better, his family, the family of Yoshi, they were found liable and they sued them for $650,000 in damages and then created two charitable funds in their son's name. One was a fund to U.S. high school students who are visiting Japan, and the other was to fund organizations that lobby for gun control.
Awesome. Well, good for them.
Yep.
I just hate these types of stories because I feel like the majority of people in the U.S. aren't that crazy, but then there are people who are that crazy, and we have shootings pretty frequently, and that's all that people abroad hear about us. And so right. It just sounds like we're this crazy, like, gun happy culture, when the reality is that the majority of people don't act or think like that, and it just gives all of us a bad name.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, the one good thing that came out of this is after the trial, the wife said to the press that her husband would, quote, never own a gun ever again, and he broke down in tears several times during the trial and was just like, I got scared, I'm sorry, you know, he didn't mean to do this. It was just a moment, a lapse moment of judgment, right, of fear. And so I think that just proves further to me, like, people are acting, they're out of character.
Yeah, acting irrationally.
Yeah, acting irrationally. So finally, the last thing that I wanted to talk about are positive ways that you can celebrate Samhain yourself.
Okay.
So ways that you can celebrate Samhain, people, are by making an altar to remind yourself of what the season is about. You can put pumpkins on there. You can put things of the color. You can put your favorite kinds of foods. Maybe you can have photos of people you love there. But to make something that reminds you of this feeling of paying homage to your ancestors and the hearth of the family and fertility. And I think it's really helpful for people specifically who may live in a place where it's the city and they don't have a lot of trees, or they don't have grass, or they don't have foliage, so they can't really see the changing of the seasons, to make these altars. So it kind of just reminds you that we live in an earth and that we live in a place that's constantly going through these cycles, and that there's constantly birth and death and rebirth happening. Another thing you can do is called the most dangerous game, Halloween summoning ritual.
What?
Yeah.
And this is a positive?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Go hunt humans. Play the most dangerous game.
All right, guys. So as always, play at your own risk. And this is brought to you by theghostinmymachine.com, which I love because I think that's saying so like a ghost is writing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the players you need to play this game is at least one person. You will require a candle, a lighter, a quiet room with at least one window. The window must be capable of opening and closing. A loved one who has passed on whom you wish to contact, and a means of communicating with the person you wish to contact. Suggested materials include a pen, a pencil, piece of paper, a fogged up mirror, a voice recorder, and or planchette Ouija board. You also need a bowl or a basin, enough to fill water in it, and the means of which to warm the water. Optional but highly recommended is warm water. So the instructions. Wait until October 31st.
Okay.
Number two. So you can only do this on Samhain. Number two, either clear the building in which you plan to perform the ritual of all other people, or inform them of your intention to perform the ritual.
Yeah, don't just surprise your roommates by bringing ghosts into your house. Definitely always inform and get consent.
And if most likely, everyone's going to leave anyways.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right, see ya.
Yeah, you're fucking weird. So if any people are present in the building do not wish to leave and do not wish you to perform the ritual while you're there, do not proceed. It can end badly.
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
Number three. If you have succeeded in clearing the building or receiving the consent of those present to perform the ritual, you may proceed. When darkness has fallen completely, bring your supplies to the quiet room with the window. Number four, confirm that the window is closed. Then place the unlit candle near the window, but not so close that a breeze could cause it to go out when lit. Number five, think of a loved one that you wish to contact. Hold their name in your mind. Recall their face, their appearance, and manner. Every detail about them that you can remember. What color was their hair, their eyes, their skin tone? Were they tall, short, somewhere in between? What did they like to wear? Did they have a signature scent? How did they carry themselves? What expression most frequently flitted across their face? What did their voice sound like? How did they react whenever they saw you? Bring them to life, or so as close to life as you can in your own memory. Number six, keep thinking of this person. With the memory of them clear in your mind, light the candle, open the window, and then leave the room. When you come back, observe the state of any other room in the building than the room which you performed the invitation in. If the room remains unchanged, the ritual has failed. Do not proceed. Return to the invitation room, extinguish the candle, and close the window. You may try again another time. But if you observe any unusual phenomena, the ritual has succeeded. You may proceed. Possible indications of success include the sudden presence of a scent associated with that loved one, or a drop in temperature, and/or the sense that your loved one is nearby. Number 10. Return to the invitation room, the room that has the candle in it. If you like, you may attempt to communicate with your loved one now. How you do so is up to you. Possible methods include automatic writing, where you sit at a table with a piece of paper before you and a pen or pencil held loosely but comfortably in your non-dominant hand. Relax and clear your mind. Speak out loud to your loved one, ask them questions, or simply tell them anything you wish them to know. If your non-dominant hand begins writing of its own accord, let it, then read what's there. With the fogged mirror, you can fog a mirror up by any means you desire. Speak aloud to your loved one, then watch the mirror surface. If any words appear, read them. If any images appear, examine them. Absolutely Ooh. Not. I'm throwing that shit at the wall.
But then you have 7 years of bad luck because you're going to shatter a mirror.
What's worse, 7 years of bad luck or a mirror in your hand talking to you? With the voice recorder, turn on the recorder, speak aloud to your loved one, leave at least 15 or 20 seconds of silence between each sentence or question, and when you are finished, turn off the device and play the recording back. Listen closely to the silence, especially during the moments of silence, to see if anything's there. Last one, a planchette. If your planchette is designed to facilitate automatic writing, fit it with a pen or pencil, place it on a piece of paper, rest your fingers lightly on its surface, and follow the procedure for automatic writing laid out above. If your planchette is designed for use with an Ouija board, place it on the board, rest your fingers lightly on its surface, and speak aloud to your loved one and watch for movement. Note, use of a talking board or Ouija board is not recommended.
Well, I think that's because, like, we've talked about...
You open the gates.
Yeah, you open the gates and you might not be talking to your loved one. You might be talking to a different demon.
Well, why do the demons only... Like, if that's the case, then how can a demon not talk to you through the mirror or not talk to you through the writing? Like, why can they only talk to you when you're using a $14 board you got from Walmart?
I don't know. Maybe we should do a whole episode on the history of Ouija boards, because maybe that's where the answer lies.
Oh, it probably is.
Yeah.
Lastly, continue conversing until either you or your loved one are ready to finish. I don't know how you know they're ready to, like, if the room sets on fire, then calmly.
If the devil himself appears in the mirror, you know that you must close the portal.
Right. And now it's time for the last stage, the farewell. Number one, say your goodbyes. Thank your loved one for speaking with you. Then let them be. They will know to leave when the night is over. I don't like that. No, leave right away.
Yeah.
When the sun had risen, extinguish the candle and close the windows. All right. And that's it. What do you think about that?
I think, and because I was, as you were telling me all these different ways to communicate with people who have passed on, I was thinking about how we've talked before about, like, well, don't use a Ouija board if you, like, don't want to become haunted, right? Or, like, don't do this if you don't want to become haunted. But then you also got me thinking, because you were talking about different cultural traditions of communicating with people who have passed on, or leaving offerings for people who have passed on and remembering their memory. And those types of traditions are all really positive. So I think maybe what this is, maybe what I'm going to do is, maybe if you know that you have a loved one who's reaching the age where they might be passing soon, or maybe just, like, have a conversation and say, hey, when you pass on, do you want me to try to communicate with you? Because the only time that I see this being a negative is where we hear these stories of people who are basically trying to, like, necromance people who have passed on and force them back into our world to try to gain something from them, like knowledge of the future or the past or whatever. Like
exploiting them.
And so I think that you kind of walk, like, a really fine line whenever you're trying to communicate with someone who's passed on, because how do you know if they even want to talk to you or not? And none of us know how the afterlife works, right? So maybe we think there's just nothing and there's no way to talk to anybody, or maybe we think that people stay here when something bad happened or there's residual energy.
Well, if you believe the Stingy Jack tale, it's like, it seems like only people who are super fucked up don't get into hell, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't automatically go to heaven and you are not, you don't go to hell, I don't know, like, that person's fucked up to me.
Right. Or maybe that is purgatory, is when you haven't been able to go to either of those places. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. I kind of feel like, and because we don't know what happens in the afterlife, I would be really concerned about accidentally pulling someone's soul back from somewhere that they want to be just to talk to me. And what if they get stuck here because of it?
Right.
So I think maybe the, like, solution is to ask people, hey, do you want me to try to contact you after you pass on?
Like, if you're chilling in heaven at a, like, a really nice library, like, in a comfy chair, and then all of a sudden, like, you get a tap on your shoulder and it's like, hey, your niece wants to talk to you, but if you talk to them, you can't come back.
Right.
Like, what, most people would be like, you know what, fuck them.
Yeah. Right. But I don't know, but maybe, I mean, nobody knows what happens, right? So if you know that you have a loved one that was super into that shit, like, then maybe it's fine to do that. I don't know. I think it's probably a case-by-case basis, right?
I mean, I guess we can't know until we're ghosts.
Right, yeah. And then here's my promise to you, Natalia. If I become a ghost and it doesn't affect me to come back and haunt you, I'm going to come back and haunt you only for one night, and it's going to be Halloween.
No, I don't. Researching for Halloween, because I didn't even read you all of the stories of bad things that have happened in Halloween. I left a lot of them out. The majority of them are people seemingly going crazy and, like,
murdering
pretty much. It's like, there was a few of them where it was like, oh, kids were throwing eggs at a car and then a guy got out to reprimand them and they fucking shot him to death.
God, or stabbed him.
Yeah, or exactly. Or, like, someone was TPing my house and then I kicked them in the face until they died.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, and I'm so sorry, I was just scared.
Yeah, it's Halloween and it's a scary holiday and I was on edge.
Yeah, it's like, if that's you, if you are so terrified, then please stay inside and do not come out. You are the kind of person that during Samhain needs to be indoors and do not come outside, please, because if you can't handle people, you know, like stealing gates and hinges or writing like obscene things on the walls,
stealing your jack-o'-lantern,
yeah, then like don't fucking put a jack-o'-lantern outside also.
Yeah, or if you get TP'd, don't shoot the person that TP'd you.
Right, it's just TP.
It's just toilet paper. Everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone relax.
Well, I think my favorite part from everything you just told me is the Stingy Jack story. I think that is so entertaining.
I like him. I like him, and I liked Igor. I like to think of, you know,
Igor, the guy we invented.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I like to just imagine a super drunk, like, funny, like, kind of just, like, buffoon.
Celtic,
yeah.
Buffoon.
Buffoon who's, like, also stingy. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, let's get a drink together. And then, like, oh, that's not Irish, but let's get a drink together. And then he's like, oh, but can you lend me some money? And then the devil's like, sure, like, just I'll turn into a coin. And then it's like, ha ha,
yeah, I've got you coin. Now
right, it's like you before went go your right to have your soul have a final resting place in exchange for like what today is probably worth like 4 cents.
Yeah. And I also think the funniest part of that story is the idea of someone who's just so annoying that not even the devil wants to torture you.
Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Just like, God, if I have to spend an eternity torturing the most annoying man in the world, I will straight up kill myself. That's what the devil's thinking.
I like Saint Peter just being like, you're an asshole. No,
yeah, you're bounced from heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Oh, before we end this episode, I wanted to remind everybody that Natalia and I are trying to get nominated for the Discover Pod Awards.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go to our Instagram, you will see that the link on our profile right now is for the 2019 Discover Pods Awards call for nominations. So nominations go through October 22nd, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And
so that's super soon.
That's
if you're listening
super
to this,
soon.
Stop what you're doing.
Stop
Pause
what you're doing.
This.
Nominate us.
Do it right now.
You can vote multiple times, I'm pretty sure. I think you just have to use a different. It doesn't say anything about not being allowed to vote multiple times. So right. I'm going to just go ahead and say vote multiple times.
What, do we get something if we win?
Well, this is for nominations. So if we get nominated, then we can be voted on to win something. Right. And I actually think we have a really good chance. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're not going to win anything. And that's fine, too. But I think we have a really good chance of winning the best new podcast of 2019.
Ooh.
Because I only know of maybe two or three other podcasts that started in 2019 that have a following.
Mm.
And so if you go on here, if you click on the nominations, there's all these different categories. Some of the categories are Best Overall Podcast 2019, Best New Podcast 2019, Best Individual Podcast Episode, Most Innovative Podcast, Best True Crime Podcast, Best News Podcast, Best Interview Style Podcast, Best History Podcast, Best Comedy Podcast, Best Society and Culture Podcast.
We are all of those.
We're fucking all of these, I feel like. Yeah. You know, Best Government Podcast?
Yeah.
Vote for us. So, they're not going to bother you with like ads or anything because I voted for us and I haven't gotten a single
email
from
them. Right,
I
voted for us too.
Yeah.
And even though this might not seem like a big deal to you guys, if we get nominated for anything, even being able to say that our podcast is being nominated for something helps us give value to the normies who are like, well, what are you doing? So, you know, so we can be like, oh, well, we've been nominating for something. And then that can kind of help us eventually one day to perhaps get sponsors or.
Right. Or maybe even just widen our audience would be so great to just have new listeners. And then maybe we can get more guests for you guys and like. Just adds legitimacy to our podcast.
I mean, my ultimate goal is I want to speak with the devil himself. I need to get him in here and I need to ask him and I need to see, is he wearing a red suit from head to toe? Is he holding a pitchfork or is he a man in a normal business suit? I need to know if Hollywood is right. I have so many questions and I maybe.
And we need the answers now.
Yeah.
So if we can show that, if we can send the devil our resume and it's impressive enough, he might come on our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, you guys.
Yeah.
So please vote for us. Again, that link is going to be at our Instagram under on our profile. There's a link that's normally to, I think it's normally to our iTunes account, but I changed it to the Discover Pods Awards. So it's awards.discoverpods.com /discover-pods-awards-2019-nominations/.
All right, they got that.
You guys, come on, help us. We just want to be nominated.
Yeah.
That would be really fucking sick.
And finally, it's Halloween month. If you guys are dressing up as anything cute or spooky or whatever, just tag us in it. Let's Get Haunted. We're into that. We support it. This is our time to be haunted. And
it's spooky month.
It's spooky month. So get in there and
I've got 6 costumes. It's spooky month. We're going ham. We're going to go hard as a motherfucker. And we really want to be nominated for this shit. We're also trying to bring you a special guest next episode. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say too much because you never know. I'm like very wary of saying things until it happens. Yep. But we're working really hard to get a special guest for next episode who is a spooky person. And mm-hmm. we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Natalia. That was a great story. I learned so much about the history of Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not forever.
A hazelnut. If your nuts stay together, then that means that you have a relationship with a nut.
BRB, gotta go spin an apple, the most haunted fruit, and try to catch it in my mouth.
With Igor.
With Igor.
Bye.
Bye.